Welcome to the Transformational Wealth Podcast with Mark Henn. Mark is devoted to helping you understand how the wealthy invest and explaining how to leverage investment strategies to make the most of your financial situation. In each episode, Mark breaks down key financial strategies and provides direct action steps so you can expand your financial toolkit and change the trajectory of your financial life. He also sits down with individuals who are actively using these wealth-building power plays, giving you real-world insights into how these strategies work in action. Are you ready? Let's jump in and start building your financial future today.
I'm Mark Henn, CEO of Harvest Financial Advisors, and I'm excited today. We have Carter Frelick joining us today to talk about the super asset class of businesses. What I wanted to do, if you remember, this season one of the Transformational Wealth podcast is based upon my most current book, Power Plays of the Wealthy. And in there, we talk about the five super asset classes, one of those being businesses. And if you've read the book, you get a better understanding of how taxes and investing kind of come together to create wealth for the wealthy. But then also in the same, by creating that wealth, they're also passing along and benefiting society as well by providing places for people to live, businesses that create jobs, investing in oil and gas that creates energy. And so today I invited Carter to join us. Carter and I met through Strategic Coach, a coaching program we met a few years ago. He's had a successful business run, but started, from the ground up. And I thought it would be an inspiration and just some key points that he could bring out to help maybe, blooming entrepreneurs or those of you that wanted to maybe take that entrepreneurial leap and have and create that special super asset class of businesses. And as you expand your portfolio and expand your career, but we're so thankful for Carter to join us. So Carter, welcome.
Yeah, Mark, thank you very much for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Now, Carter, Carter's a CPA, and I'm going to look down here to get this as well. The main business I know you have is Launch Development Finance Advisors. You're the managing principal of that. You also are Blackwood Advisors, managing principal of that as well. And then you have a Frelick Properties, which is you're managing principal of that as well. So we'll get into a little bit of that. But, we're recording here in the live from the studios in sunny Westchester, Ohio, from the Harvest Financial Advisors office. But you're actually probably in a place that's even a little bit sunnier than where we're at. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, I'm actually in Newport Beach, California, getting ready to head back to Arizona, where it is sunny. Right. Here, there's a little, cloud cover from the marine layer. But a little bit about myself. I was born and raised in Dickinson, North Dakota. And during that time, since we're this episode is on businesses, I always have worked, most of my life, either for my dad in the building materials business, and I was always starting businesses. So I was cutting grass, I was shoveling snow, selling candy to the neighborhood kids, always doing that kind of stuff. Left when I was 18, went to school in California, where I ended up getting my accounting degree and working for the Big 8 Accounting. So I'm dating myself a little bit. And then went to an accounting firm by the name of Kenneth Leventhal, where we were in the management consulting side. And during that time, California went through Prop 13 and all the infrastructure dollars that the cities were collecting through taxes and building infrastructure dried up literally overnight. So the development community was told by the cities, hey, guys, we don't have any money. You have to build all the infrastructure that we were building. The development community said, fine, but allow us to do it as if we were a city. So California passed the Community Facilities District Act of 1982, and we read the statute being the newly minted consulting advisors for Kenneth Leventhal. I did auditing for 2 years and 2 months too long, as I like to say. I'm still certified in Texas, Arizona, and California, but I don't do any accounting. So if you talk tax, I'm not going to be able to help you.
Okay.
But we read the statute and we said, geez, we could borrow $200 million from B of A and put the infrastructure in the ground and pay B of A back over time. Or we could set up one of these special purpose taxing districts, or called community facilities districts in Arizona, borrow that $200 million and pass on the obligation to repay the obligation to the homeowners. And we said, hell, we don't even need a calculator. Let's go start doing this. So we started doing it for the big ranches in Southern California, which were Irvine Company and Rancho Mission Viejo, which is now Mission Viejo. And that's how we started. In other words, we help our clients borrow money that they don't have to pay back. And we only work for the private sector. But that's a little bit of me and you know, how we, and I can get more into it. But eventually we left Kenneth Leventhal. There were three of us. We started our own company in 1991, and the rest is history, as they say. So,
as I remember, you were one of the leaders in this. I mean, you were kind of the groundbreaking as the laws changed to jump into this. Correct?
Yeah. And we're still groundbreakers, if I could say that. And Mark, I'm going to use some of the language that the audience may or may not be familiar with, but you and I certainly are from Strategic Coach. But our goal in our business is very simple. That's to be a hero to the land development and home building industries. So every day when I show up to work, it's what are the DOS issues that our clients are experiencing? And usually that centers around cost of capital. Yeah,
right.
It's too high. It's too much. How do I reduce it? How do I get more of it sooner than later? And then also related to dealing with jurisdictions and entitlements. So with that as our fuel every day to come in, and what can I do to help our clients overcome those challenges? What can I do to help them seize those opportunities? And what can our team do to provide their team with more confidence? Just because we've been doing this little niche thing for over 40 years, and we kind of sort of know a little bit about it. Although I will have you know, Mark, we just invented something that took us 30 years to figure out in Texas that has literally just changed the financing landscape. But I'm always learning. We're always learning. We don't say we have all the issues or we have all the answers. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's just a matter of looking at the world differently and, you know, how do we put different statutes, laws, financing concepts together to create a new thing. And we recently did that in Texas and just completely changed the way infrastructure and master plan communities are developed. So
great.
It's been a lot
of fun. So when I see you next, I'll look forward to hearing more about that up in Chicago or whatever. But you said something I want to go back to. You want to be a hero to them as well. And one of the things that I want to go back to that for a second, because one of the things I see when people, some that want to start a business, they're focused on, I can make more money. They think they can make more money. In fact, a lot of times some businesses are started, you know, when we think about someone doing the work in a business, they think, well, I could do this and have my own business and make more money. And what I've noticed is that, and I wonder if you've noticed the same thing as well. If you focus on the money aspect of it, the businesses typically don't go well. And there's more stress and more pressure, I think, on the entrepreneur. When you focus on adding value to somebody else and bringing something to them, the money just kind of follows along. And so that's what I think of when I hear you say the word be a hero to them as well. Would you agree with that? Or do you have any other comment on that?
You know, absolutely. And this has been a transition for me. When we left Kenneth Leventhal, we left because we weren't making enough money. You know, the partners, they weren't doing what we wanted them to do for us. You know, it was all about us. And over the years, that has changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. And when we did leave Kenneth Leventhal and set up my first company that I founded with other guys, and then I sold in 2018, our goal was to expect nothing until we created values for someone else. And I think that's a really huge mindset change because it's all about them.
Yes.
And it gets back to their DOS issues, dangers, opportunities, and strengths. And it really helped shape how I look at being an entrepreneur. And initially, I wanted to have more money, wanted to have that house, wanted to have that office. And it was very superficial. That's changed. And so you're all about transformational wealth. Well, what is transformational wealth? I used to think it was a number.
Right.
Or it was a number of, you know, I need to have this many properties. I need to have this. I need to have that. And I found out that no matter when I achieved those goals, it was hollow. It didn't mean anything. And, you know, I just, okay, well, I need more. Well, what number is going to be enough?
Yeah.
And it felt like being on a hamster wheel. And now I just want to have enough to do whatever I want to do when I want to do it, you know, and more importantly, I want to have the four freedoms that we always talk about: freedom of time, purpose, relationship, and money. And I always knew I wanted more, but I didn't know what more was until I heard that in Strategic Coach and said, you know what, that makes a lot of time.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I want to have freedom of time to work on what I want to work on, or be with my family when I want to be with them. I only want to be involved with people that I want to be involved with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that are non-toxic, sure. That are, you know, good people, have a bigger future, going in a better direction, and, you know, have enough money to do what I want to do. But then also to be able to work in my unique ability and have the purpose I want, playing in an area that I love, which is master plan community development. And I'm like a kid in the sandbox. Every day I wake up and go, all right, I get to do this. And mm-hmm. So to me, that's what the wealth is. It's just pure joy right now. And so I could have only gotten that by starting my own business.
So I'll take that. So you're right. So one of the things I ask everybody is, what is their definition of transformational wealth? I'll take that as your answer right there. And so thank you for sharing as well. And, you know, shout out to Dan Sullivan, a strategic coach. You know, Carter's mentioning the four freedoms there, and those are very important. We all want those four freedoms. You mentioned also unique ability, and, you know, the unique ability of a person is really being able to do those things where you're really good at them. You get a lot of energy, and you kind of just reference that. You get up in the morning, you're able to say like, well, I get to do this, not I have to do this.
Yeah.
Now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And,
right.
And to recognize, along with that, getting rid of those things that you don't enjoy and you're not good at and can drain you as well, right? And so maybe at the beginning of your entrepreneurial journey, you have to do those things. But as the business progresses, you're looking to just focus on what are those things. And I know you've done this. What are those things that I can do that I'm really good at that give me a lot of energy? And then to quote something else, right? Dan, if you hear this, it's going to be like a strategic coach plug, but, you know, quoting from him, you know, who, not how, and there's even a book by that title that he wrote, is not how can I do these things that I don't enjoy or don't get a lot of energy from, but at a certain point, who can I get to do those things as well? And I know you've surrounded yourself with some who's to be able to do those things so you can focus and be in your unique ability. And that's one of those freedoms there of being able to do that with your business as well. I want to go back to something you mentioned, that you kind of are an entrepreneur from the beginning, cutting lawns, always looking for how you can do that. Create a business somehow on your own. I kind of have some of those same stories too, cutting lawns. I would make candy and try to sell it on the driveway. There was other people that had lemonade stands. I had a candy stand, and I will admit one time I did go and buy Hershey chocolate bars, melt them down, reshape them, and cut them into squares and sell them for more than what the candy bars were worth to begin with. I think I might have made like $1.70. So if I will confess that sin right now, Hershey's, if you want to come back to me, I'll be happy to pay that, even with some interest maybe as well. But how did those early entrepreneurial journeys for you, were you, you know, obviously you got your CPA degree and so forth. Were you always focused on maybe wanting to have your own business, or did you kind of do those entrepreneurial things that we all kind of think about it as kids or teenagers, kind of go off into the corporate world and then the entrepreneurial bug hit you again? Or were you always kind of focused maybe on having a business at some point in time?
Well, I've always loved business. Some kids love sports, baseball. I mean, I did all of that. But the thing that really resonated with me was business. It was always business. Yeah, I just wanted to be involved in that business world. I also have some issues with authority. You know, I wanted to, you know, kind of, oh, I don't know if I agree with that. So I'm completely unemployable right now, I think. Because I just had different ideas, and I wanted to do things my way, or at least
sure.
what I thought was my way with and to be able to move quickly. So that really set the stage. And
right.
I mean, I've just always had this bug, Mark, and if I could start more businesses, I would. I'm trying just to focus on the things I'm really good at, and we're always looking at businesses within the business. So within launch,
right,
there's multiple different profit centers and businesses within businesses that we're expanding and giving opportunities to those that work with us, because I think you have to give them opportunities to have a bigger future as well. So
sure.
It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And one of the things I want to point out, we've talked a lot about, hey, here's all the great positive things that are going on. We want to get into some of the struggles or pitfalls here in a second. One of the things you mentioned, maybe even looking at starting more businesses, one of the things that can be a pitfall for entrepreneurs. So for those of you that are looking to start a business, I kind of want to throw this out to them as well. Something that I've seen is that ability to start a business, because usually entrepreneurs have lots of business ideas. Starting a business, having it grow, and then at some point in time, you will hit what we call the ceiling of complexity, where it's easy at first and you get going, but then you're going to run into some complex issue that you have to address. Do I need to hire more people? How do I need to expand? Do I need to market something? So a significant change in the business structure. And a lot of times what entrepreneurs will do is they will not fight through that ceiling of complexity so they can take their business to the next level. They will just say, well, this is getting hard. It must not be working really super great. So I'll just go and take another business idea and start that as well and create that. So they never really grow that first business that might have been a great idea as well. So I just want to confirm with you, I know the answer to this, but that's not necessarily what you're talking about. You're seeing your businesses grow. I'm sure you've gone through levels of complexity. For you, would it be something more like adding on new businesses that might be complementary to what you're already doing, things like that?
Well, and I have a sticker on my computer that says, keep the one thing the one thing.
That's right.
Because I'm a squirrel chaser. You know, I'm like, geez, that's a good idea. We should do that.
Right.
And so with our mission is to be a hero to the development and home building industry. How do we do that? We do that by helping our clients finance infrastructure, help them mm-hmm. reduce costs. And I'm not an engineer, so I'm not going to come up with a better way to build an overpass.
Right.
But I come up with ways to make other benefiting landowners pay for that bridge sooner rather than later, reducing my clients' costs. And then three, help them mitigate risk, meaning we're shifting risk from the private sector to the public sector or to bond buyers,
right,
all with the goal of enhancing project profitability and returns. So every new business idea that we have within the business has to flow into one of those buckets.
Okay.
And as long as it does, then we move forward. But if somebody came to me and said, hey, Carr, we have a great way to build a website. Well, okay, which one of those buckets does that fit in? And typically that wouldn't, you know, we're not website builders. So, we're not going to do that. And that's generally how we do it. But Mark, I got to tell you, I'm a learner, but I'm a slow learner.
Okay.
And it took me a long time, to give up the reins. It was very uncomfortable for me because I'd always been a guy in control.
Hmm.
And I had to have my hands in everything. And in looking back, the learning experience is I didn't need to do that.
Mm.
And so fast forward to where we're at today, after I sold my last company, I decided I want to do things differently. I want to focus as much as I can in my unique ability. To do that, I'm going to have a bigger team. I hired what I call a strategic assistant that is helping me with a lot of different things. We signed up for the EOS or Entrepreneurial Operating System. I tried to self-manage that for a while and it didn't do it very well. So we hired an integrator. I'm now out looking for an implementer, I'm using some of their terminology, but I would be what was called a visionary, meaning the idea guy. And then the integrator would be more or less like the CEO who is running the offices in California and Texas and Idaho and Arizona and driving the teams.
Innovating. It sounds like you're getting the opportunity now then to add those who's into the business as opposed to how you do that. And it also sounds like what I thought I heard you saying was that you recognized yourself that it was difficult to let go of that control, to delegate out But that was, I imagine, once you got comfortable with that, that's when you started, at least your freedom of time and probably started to explode after that. Yeah. Yeah.
And what I found is that, oh, nobody can do it better than me. And to some degree, that's true.
Sure.
But 80% is enough.
That's right.
And so I'll typically start off engagements with the team. We'll lay out all of the issues, and then I'll review it at the end. They can come to me, but I'm not in the day-to-day.
Yeah.
I'm in the place now where I'm just having a lot of fun. The things that used to aggravate the hell out of me, I'm no longer doing. I've got do that. So for anybody listening, and people told me this before, and I didn't heed their advice until later, but build a good team around you that you trust and is reliable, and they love to do the things that you don't like to do. Yeah.
Right.
And there are some people I don't like, you know, putting together and approving invoices and paying bills and that kind of stuff. But there are people that love doing it.
Yeah.
And I never even see it anymore.
That's one of the things you have to learn too, is that because you don't like it doesn't mean other people don't like it. And you have to realize that there are people that actually really love doing this. Let's give them the opportunity to love to do that, and I can get that off my plate. Something, yeah.
They feel so heard and seen.
Yeah.
And it builds that trust relationship. We've got a controller, and she is just revamping the entire accounting system and in the weeds. And, you know, we have meetings every now and then, and, you know, to get direction, and she loves it. I mean, if it were me, and I'm a CPA, I would pour gas on myself and light myself on fire. I mean, it's no longer what I want to do. But
hey, don't mince your words, Carter. Tell me how you really feel about that.
Yeah, I know. But you know, she loves it, and I love having her. She's an integral part of the team. And that's how we want to build our business, with people that absolutely love what they do, love to show up in their unique ability. And now that's being transformative in our whole organization by having those kind of people.
I appreciate you just sharing that. I mean, that's really great to hear as the business builds and grows, that you've been able to make that transition to do that. Because I think that's a difficult step for any entrepreneur to take. I want to get to some other challenges you might have had as well. But first, before we do that, I'm going to look down here and just say that this episode of Power Plays of the Wealthy is sponsored by Harvest Financial Advisors, a team of seasoned professionals committed to helping clients grow, protect, and enjoy their wealth. Whether you're building wealth, planning for retirement, or looking for smart investment strategies, our team is here to guide you every step of the way. Visit harvestadvisors.com to learn more. And let's jump back into our conversation now with Carter. I'm curious what struggles you might have faced. And these could be as you've been going through the journey. You know, did you ever even start a business that maybe it didn't work out and you learned something from that? Or other struggles you might have faced, such as time constraints or challenging endeavors or things that were out of your control? And then did you feel like giving up? And then did you, or were you able to push through, and how you did that? So there's a lot there. So I'll let you kind of unpack that.
Well, in the public accounting arena and the consulting arena that I came from, 60 hours was minimum, 80 hours was more the norm, you know, that you would be working a week. And so when I left, I had that mindset, you know, we were swapping time for money.
Right.
To some degree, we still are. But I came with that mindset that we'll just grind away. We'll grind.
Right.
Eventually, that catches up to you. At least it caught up to me. And I wanted to still focus on growing the company. But my mindset changed, rather than swapping time for money, to look at results. And all my clients cared about, they didn't care about how long it took me. I mean, they kind of did, because they were paying the bills. They just wanted that result. They wanted that financing. So that was that was difficult for me, because I'm a bit of a workaholic, and to be able to cut away from that. And it's taken me a lot of deliberate thinking about where I want to be with my life. And some of the things that we've talked about, you know, the four freedoms, what does that mean? And And by getting rid of some of the things that took up that 80 hours that I really wasn't good at and didn't like, I just delegated it to others. Still getting done, just not by me. And right. and I'm able to focus on that which really drives profitability to the firm and brings results to our clients. So that has been the hardest struggle for me is to cut down my work week. And now I'm at taking weekends off, working 40, 45 hours, and I'm going to try to cut that to 35 at some point. I've started a lot of different companies, one of which I read the book, Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week, and I thought, God, I really like that idea. I'm gonna see if I can set up a business within the business that generates recurring revenue, whether we're working or not.
Sure.
So we went in, and not to bore the audience, but with these districts that we set up, we're setting up cities within a city. They're issuing tax-exempt bonds to build public infrastructure. And for the developers to get repaid for that public infrastructure, they have to prove that they actually built what they said they were going to build. It was accepted by the jurisdiction or the district, and they actually paid for it. So there's a lot of accounting involved in this. A lot of invoices, draws, lien releases, canceled mm-hmm. checks that we have to prove. So right. I thought, I'm going to build a software system that tracks all of this stuff. And we did.
Right.
And then we started thinking, well, you know, and we called it the reimbursement tracking system, RTS. And we said, well, since we're looking at tracking all of these reimbursements, there's lots of other reimbursements we could be tracking too. So we added those on to the software system. And pretty soon we had this huge software system, and our clients, you know, always wanted us to change something, which meant we had to go back to the programmers. And long story short, this thing got to be so complicated that our clients couldn't use it anymore.
Oh, wow.
Because we had it trying to do too many things and nobody could keep up with it. And while it was maybe a good idea, it sucked up more of our time than it was worth. And we canceled, you know, we shut that thing down. So what is my lesson? I'm not a software programmer. Our company is not a software programmer. It doesn't fit into those three buckets, financing infrastructure, reducing costs, mitigating risk. So we still do that process now. However, we just do the one process for the special districts, and it's all run through a super sophisticated Excel spreadsheet that pulls information from the cloud. Then we can manipulate it. And I can't manipulate it. I'm not an Excel guy but others that just love that stuff, they take care of it. And so I learned what we are and what we're not. And it was a great learning experience, but I also learned what I don't want to be doing. And,
sure.
and we're staying out of the software business as it relates to launch development.
You know, it's interesting you share that. I did the same thing using an Excel spreadsheet, I created a program for clients regarding income taxes for estate taxes before you die and after you die, because a lot of times strategies you might use to increase your wealth today actually have a negative impact on the value of your estate and things like that. And it just got so complex that I just said, okay, I can't, because I thought about doing the same thing. I could sell this into the financial planning community, but it got so complex. And then I realized, okay, you know, the next time Congress leaves tax laws unchanged for 10 years will be the first time. Then I thought about all the updating and change you have to go on. I said, you know, just forget it. We're not going to do that. So we'll just set that aside.
It's funny you mention that. I mean, it is so hilarious when now I look at a statute, whether we're in California or Texas or North Carolina, and just say, you know what, this doesn't work. We got to change it. So we just go change the rules, you know, and we'll just go change the state law. It makes it sound easier than it is.
Right.
You have to have, you know, the right stakeholders coming in to do it. But to your point, if the rules don't work, is there an opportunity to change them? Because we've done that a lot over the years. So,
wow.
I don't know why I brought that up. I just thought it was interesting.
Well, and I want to point out to the audience as well, and I don't know if you're allowed to say any or not, but you have some very large companies that reach out to you to help with this kind of land development. correct? I mean, I remember you rattling off some names. I'm not going to say them. If you want to share with them, that's fine. But, you know, this isn't like, you know, Bill and Tim's furniture store down the street needs something. These are large corporations that are looking to you to help them as they expand. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's pretty much all of the public builders. And if you go to our website, launch-dfa.com, you can see who they are. But we have clients that are working on small projects, very intense, about 5 acres in the middle of a central business district, which is more of kind of the one-off. But I think the largest project we're working on right now is 40,000 acres in Phoenix. So these are huge communities. Typically the average is a couple thousand acres, but we're delivering a lot of residential uses. Really the biggest states we're working in right now, Nevada, Arizona, Texas, and California is where we're seeing this. Utah as well. And we're pretty much over all the smile states, but yeah, big projects.
Well, and you, I even remember you having a conversation. We don't have to go into great detail, but you know, I remember you were being asked about, do you know anybody that can help us with modular nuclear reactors that can help power these things and so forth? And I remember you sitting there having a conversation with another coach member about how to do this. So, I mean, these are, again, very maybe small, but some very large projects as well that that companies are reaching out to you to help develop as well.
And I think that, in fact, we have a meeting with that individual and the bankers next week to talk about.
Wow.
So that's moving forward. And obviously the technology is something I know absolutely nothing about. I just need to know how to pay for it. And that's right. So how do we pay for it?
That's right. Any in your journey, and you know, as we're getting, as we're moving forward here, just looking at challenges and so forth, you know, can you, besides your needing to get over your or realizing how you're made up and addressing, you know, as you mentioned, getting rid of this idea that you have to control everything and bringing additional people in as well, any mistake that you'd be willing to share in regards to, I did this also and it did this and I had to make this change. Anything like that you'd like to share that might be, you know, encouraging, whatever, for the listeners in terms of like, you know what, mistakes are going to come along. And I think that this, you know, the end I will put on that phrase is that mistakes will come along and you get to choose whether or not you allow that just to derail you and to stop your progress, or do you learn from that? So, you know, if you have an example where maybe you learned something from additional learning you might have gotten from a mistake as well, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. And so one of my issues, if I can call it that, is I like to win, and I like to win all the time, which means I want all the deals all the time. If we don't have all the deals, I feel bad. You know, I have to call the suicide prevention hotline. And I also like to negotiate the best deals for our clients.
Sure.
In retrospect, we have cut some really good deals for our client at the detriment of the cities. And coming back, having to work with those cities again, they looked at me and they weren't real happy to have to deal with me again because they felt they were out negotiated on the last deal.
Okay.
And that came back to haunt us, you know, me at least. So not in a bad way, but it took about 10 years for that city staff to leave and a new one that didn't have a memory of the transaction.
Right.
Now our client was very happy. But in retrospect, I probably didn't have to push as hard as we did.
Okay.
And to leave something on the table would have been a better way to have handled that and to give the city some wins. So I'm always very cognizant of that to have win-wins for everybody. And I know that's an overused term, but I guess I'm getting older and I'm realizing how important that is, as opposed to previously where we just wanted to just go for the jugular and just win.
Right.
Probably hasn't served me over the long term as much as I thought it would.
So what I hear you saying,
that's a learning experience. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I hear you saying is that kind of the context of the business or seeing a bigger picture of that. Yes, I can try to get the best deal for this client, But overall, as you said, this could come back to haunt me if it's too good for the client and kind of a detriment to the city. And so now it sounds like now you're taking this kind of bigger picture approach of what can we do today? And we need to be able to recognize that in the future that we need to be in good standing as well to bring benefit to both the city and maybe another business as well, and being able to adjust that mindset,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. And we're in some instances we have more leverage with the jurisdictions, you know, just because they want our project within their boundaries. But now I'm really listening to what are they telling me or what are they not telling me? And oftentimes right. It's what are they not telling me that's really what's driving their decisions. And how do we coax that out? It's what Chris Voss would say. What is the black swan? You know, when it,
right.
that. The issue under the issues that are really driving the transaction. And then if I can apply those same DOS principles to the other side and help them, address their DOS issues while I'm addressing my client's DOS issues, we come together in the middle and we have a good relationship and a good structure that everybody feels comfortable with. And we achieve my client's goals, but at the same time and secondarily, we're also achieving the other side's goals, which often
nice.
Are cities.
And you mentioned earlier, you probably have made yourself unemployable for going back to work for somebody else. I guess one thing is, what advice would maybe you have for someone that is just starting kind of their entrepreneurial journey?
To start. And so many times I've seen people overthink it.
Right.
And I think one of the things that we have seen, and I'm a bit of a fact finder, and I like to kind of lay out how we're going to do things. But at the end of the day, the best way to write a play is to sell the tickets and to
right.
go talk to the check writers, you know, those that, you know, don't, you know, when I was doing my business, I kind of did talk to my parents a little bit about it, but they didn't understand it. But we went to the developers and we said, how would you like to borrow money you don't have to pay back? That's the elevator speech. Oh, really?
Right.
Tell me more. And oftentimes I'm going, okay, this is a new state. You know, I have the background from the other state, but this is a different set of rules. How are we going to do that? And we just
right.
sold the tickets to the play. Now we had to go write the play.
Right.
Put it together.
Right.
And so start. And then more importantly, never, never, ever, ever give up. Persistence is the most important thing. I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but I'll tell you what, I show up first, I leave last, and I never, ever give up. And that I think is probably the most important thing I can tell anybody
yeah.
is start and then never give up. You'll learn things and you may want to adjust. You know, I mean, pivot has been kind of an overused term.
Right.
But you're going to learn, you're going to get better, and then you can go back and go, what did I learn here? You know, what do I
yeah.
need to adjust in my presentation, in my product, and then go out again and go out again and go out again and go out again.
Right.
I've learned more from my failures than I have from my successes.
Well, and I appreciate you sharing that as we're getting towards the end of our time here. I appreciate you sharing that you learned a lot more from your failures than your successes. Kind of what we talk about here in investing, it's kind of like going to the University of Wall Street, where you're paying some
yeah.
tuition. So if something doesn't work right, you definitely at least need to learn something from that and then apply that to what you're going to do next as well, and not to give up. So I appreciate your emphasis on that, of not wanting to give up, because that I think that's the most crucial point that I see these entrepreneurs, again, giving up, not pushing through. And we didn't even get to the fact of all the tax advantages and things like that. Now, in Power Plays of the Wealthy in the book, I do talk about that more so, about the tax advantages of having a business and
yep.
different things you can do, because that creates more wealth for you then to do more things to add value as well for others. But that tenacity, that's probably the best word, the tenacity of just sticking with it and not giving up. So I remember when I started when I started my business here, I did two things. One, we talked about that ceiling of complexity. I threw out all of my other business ideas that I had still in a filing cabinet, right? Because we had paper back in those days still. Because I wanted to make sure that I didn't give up on the business. I wanted to push forward in this business and add on to that as it grew. And the second thing was my wife, Ruth, she was instrumental. I don't think she remembers saying this to me, but she told me two things. She said, one, if you don't do this, you'll regret it the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And two, she goes, you know what? If it doesn't work, and again, remember, we had five children at the time. We still do, but she said, if it doesn't work, we can always just move into the basement of my parents. It's not a problem. And she was serious.
Awesome.
But that's all I needed to make sure that I was not going to fail at that business as well. The most encouraging thing she could have said to make sure it worked, because I was not going
to have a support partner similar to Ruth, your wife,
yeah,
that has said, and Mark, I feel exactly like you. I can handle a lot of things, but I can't handle regret. Be on the dying bed and go, what if? And I'm going to just keep it to business. But, you know, what if that was such a good idea? What would have happened if I would have started a business? And I just encourage your listeners, if you're thinking about it, go do it. And if it works, great. If it doesn't work, great. You can't lose. You
right.
really can't.
And so the last question I have for you, and I might surprise you a little bit with this one, and you might have already answered it with one of your answers, but I want to come back to this, is a lot of times we talk about, as business owners, entrepreneurs, what happens if it doesn't work? What are the struggles? Things like that. What have you had any struggles when you think about your business? The fact that if it's too successful, that brings its own set of struggles as well. Have you, and I know your businesses have been very successful, you know, have you had some struggles with that you had to overcome as well?
Sometimes when you're successful, you start thinking, wow, I'm really successful. I could probably walk on water. I mean, and you start looking at other things. I mean, I'm just speaking for myself.
Right.
And I have to keep the one thing, the one thing. And I love real estate, as you mentioned, Froelich Properties. You know, I've been buying real estate just for my own account forever and holding
sure.
on to it and adding time. So that's nothing real sexy about that, but just
right.
I love Monopoly. So that's where that came from. But the others is, you know, maybe I should be doing this. And,
right.
and that's why I have on my keep the one thing, the one thing.
Right.
Now I'm building other companies within the company. And one is to come up with our own fund, our own source of capital. But that is, okay, we finance infrastructure. Now I don't have to go talk to the big bond funds. I just talk to the foreign investment funds.
Right.
Because we can go place our own money now.
Sure.
But it's keeping it. It's a new business. It's a new profit center. And it's interesting to me. And it's in alignment with what we do. So those are the things that we're looking at. But for me, I just want to be that guy from North Dakota to be a hero to my clients, do the next
yeah.
right thing. And we have a lot of people copying us now in Texas, and it just aggravates the hell out of me. But, you know, I guess I should take it as a compliment.
Sure.
You know, so I'm yeah. working on that. But anyway, this isn't, you know,
yeah.
I'll my hour's about up here, Doctor.
No, you're good.
Yeah. yeah.
Well, hey, my friend, thank you for joining us. Everybody, again, Carter Froelich on the Super Asset Class of Businesses. We thank you so much for taking your time here on the Transformational Wealth Podcast to share your experiences, you know, positives and negatives. I know you wouldn't go back again. I love your story. Just over the years, how your business has continued to grow and expand. And again, I appreciate your insight. And again, thank you so much for joining us today.
Mark, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Transformational Wealth Podcast with Mark Head. Mark is devoted to helping you understand how the wealthy invest and explaining how to leverage investment strategies to make the most of your financial situation. Are you ready to leverage the power plays and attain financial freedom? Visit markhen.com to tap into the power plays of the wealthy to start building your financial future today.